Hey, it's Jacob Goldstein from Business History. In our new series, American Genius, we tell the stories of three great writers who changed the way business works in America. Our first episode is about Benjamin Franklin, who, among many other things, was a best-selling business writer. Take a listen.
He's writing this much later in his life, consciously creating this image of himself. And I do want to emphasize how unusual this model is at the time, this self-made man myth, because you don't want to be self-made. It's low class to be self-made. You know, this idea that we have today is the opposite, right? And it comes from Franklin. Today, there is the derisive term nepo baby.
Well, exactly right. And these days, if you are a billionaire, you had better have a Benjamin Franklin story about starting in a garage, coming up with the idea from nothing.
And here is Benjamin Franklin inventing it right before our eyes.
This has been brought to you by Odoo. To listen to more of our American Genius series, listen to Business History. New episodes release every Wednesday on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batzer with Victor Davis Hanson, Professor Victor Davis Hanson of the Hoover Institution, a classicist. His new book is The Dying Citizen, How Progressive Elites, Tribalism, and Globalization Are Destroying the Idea of America. Once upon a time in the Roman Empire, there was a group of people, very rich, very male, of the optimates and their wives, all powerful. And the populares, the people of Rome, were empowered, but with limits, with severe limits. This is during the Republic, replaced by the imperial system. Today, what we have is a situation where the elites of the earth don't even gather in Washington. They gather at a Swiss village, which I'm told by people who've been there is not very attractive, called Davos. And hence, Davos Man. Victor, who is, what is Davos Man, and how does he or it or she rule?
These are people who feel that they're singular in their own particular countries. And they're usually captains of industry, billionaires, members of governments, celebrities, actors. They all feel that their own particular country, and they're mostly, to be frank, in Europe and in the United States and North America, and to a lesser extent in Japan, etc. And they feel that because they have been so blessed, they have this singular wisdom that the way the world should be run. And the world is not being run that way on issues as diverse as, you know, climate change, abortion, taxation, size of government, because they're not listened to. And they're not listened to because they're shackled by democratic system. So they want to get together and create a super body that would transcend national law. And you can see it with the EU as the first step, that the EU has done that with the sovereignty of individual European countries. But they have even said, you know, we have to have a national tax law that a country like Ireland doesn't lower capital gains to draw in capital at the expense of other countries that could tax and use that money more wisely for climate change, etc. So they want to undermine the idea of sovereignty and borders and make one world government, utopianism. But anointed people would run it, and they would not, John, be subject to the ramifications of their own ideologies. We saw with John Kerry when questioned about the use of a private jet to go to Davos, and he basically said, I have to be able to spew carbon out the tailpipe of my private jet because I'm working on a cosmic level to stop that.
The Davos Man, most recently interrupted by 2 or 3 years of the pandemic, the Davos Man is keen on climate change. Why, Victor? How does that empower the Davos man or woman, and how does it leave the middle class out?
Well, go back to the quote in 2008 by Rahm Emanuel. Never let a crisis go to waste. Reverberated during the COVID crisis by Hillary Clinton, said never let it go to waste. We need one-payer health care. Gavin Newsom said we need progressive capitalism. And Klaus Schwab, the architect of Davos, who said, who wrote a book, John, called COVID and the Great Reset. And what they believe climate change offers them, they've got an unexpected boon with COVID because they said, and he says this in his book, that it allows super and singular government powers that otherwise the people would not grant if they weren't terrified. And the same thing is true of climate change. If you tell people every single year, as AOC said, that 10 years we're dead, or that Barack Obama said we're going to be, you know, the seaside is going to be awash with rising tides and the beaches and the homes, then you create an artificially ginned up crisis, and then that allows you to have artificially ginned up measures to counter that artificial crisis as is ministered by the unelected. So that's the idea. And anybody, because a lot of these people are postmodernists that have lost their religion or their idea of transcendence, this has become almost a missionary religious experience, climate change. And they approach it with the same way of an early Christian convert, with exceptional zeal and intolerance for dissent or debate about the main premise or the commandments of the religion.
A popular way for people who are well-to-do and travel widely and have lots of stories about their education is to call himself or herself a citizen of the world. What are they conveying, Victor, when they say that?
They believe that their own particular country has interests that are not compatible with their utopian vision of what all interests. So there's no difference between any particular country, just like there's no difference between any particular person. It's the translation of that Greek word cosmopolitan. So Socrates supposedly said that he was a cosmopolitan. But what it means is that nationalism and pride in a particular place and honoring your particular ancestors and customs and traditions and stories and songs are all antithetical to a one world brotherhood. It's something like when you read, if you read between the lines, or you can read, I should say, explicitly in 1984 by George Orwell, he explains how the world has lost sovereignty and it's East Asia, Oceania. There's three countries and it's all been conglomerated. And I think that's what they feel is the best way to control and make people feel and do the right thing. The right thing is what they want everybody to do. And you can't do that with too many countries. You got to get all in the same space, the same playbook.
Yes, you're right. It's not the Americanization of globalization. It's the globalization of America. So we go to two books that you identify. One I've read, the other I have not. H.G. Wells' Shape of Things to Come, 1933, about these warriors of the air who arrive after a long sickness wipes out a population in London. The streets of London have fallen apart into stones and grass growing between the pavement. And our hero lands in an aircraft, Shape of Things to Come. There are no borders. The other book I don't know, Norman Angell, The Great Illusion, 1909. Yes. I'm presuming that's the same idea. Why do citizens of the world want to erase borders? How does that help them?
Well, I think that borders cause wars, and if there were no borders and there were just one government, then everybody would be complacent and there would be no need to fight, and we would buy fiat. They could rule by fiat and we could just accept things. And so they want to mandate sameness. It's very similar to the idea of the Soviet system in the 1920s, where if they said we have Kazakhstan or we have Crimea or we have Georgia or we have Armenia, we can destroy all of these national identities and make one aggregate sameness, a new Soviet man, and we'll have peace. And what they didn't realize, or they did realize, I should say, that they killed 20 million people for that view. And then when they created that bloc, the next thing was, well, the West is not on the same page, so we're going to have to absorb the non-communist world. And so they all, what's striking about the Great Reset and the Davos people, implicit, John, is the use of force and coercion if somebody does not choose to accept their utopianism.
A citizen of the United States would disappear into citizen of the world. One more book, Wendell Willkie, who ran for president against FDR in 1940. Wendell Willkie was a Democrat, and he was a technocrat working on hydroelectric. However, he became very popular in the literati set in New York and converted himself to the Republican Party. The Philadelphia Convention called out for him, "We want Willkie, we want Willkie." He lost badly despite his excellent media. They gave him great coverage in New York. But then the war started, and FDR sent him on a world tour. And Wendell Willkie, who died young, he had health problems, wrote a book, One World. What was that, Victor?
Well, it was a warning that we should have listened to Woodrow Wilson and created, you know, and the League of Nations should have been given plenipotentiary power and be able to enforce its edicts. And we should have joined it. And we have a second chance, and that is to create something called the United Nations that will do what the League of Nations should have done, make a one world police force and one world government. And then we wouldn't have had this war that he was seeing unfold. And again, the premise was that there are in every country a few like-minded souls that are of liberal temperament. And if they can get together and we can voluntarily hand over power to them, like Platonic guardians in Plato's Republic, then they can do what's right for us because we don't have the education or the morality to know what's good for us. So we need to be directed, but we don't want to be directed toward nationalism or conflicting visions. We need one vision of the anointed.
Barack Obama, in making speeches for the campaign, said there's American exceptionalism just the way there's British exceptionalism. He went on. What does that construction mean?
Well, he was trying to tell Americans, don't be chauvinistic. Don't think you're better than anybody else, because Greece, I think he cited the United Kingdom, they think they're good. And in his relativist frame of reference and mindset, who is to say who anything is better than anything else? And what he didn't realize is he could have said, while every country thinks they're singular, unfortunately, the United States, let's be honest, is singular. It's the world's oldest democracy. It's the only multiracial democracy that's ever worked in the history of civilization. It's got the highest achievement in science, in military power, in government stability. It has more immigrants come every year than all other countries combined. He could have said all of that and much more, but he didn't believe that. And so he believed that the United States just is basically no different than a small Greece or a larger United Kingdom, and it would be unfair to other countries to suggest otherwise.
No borders.
As a globalist. He is a globalist.
No borders with, let's say, peasants. We're going to turn to a blow to all of these chapters that just happened. It's called The Pandemic. The book is The Dying Citizen. Victor Davis Hanson is the author. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.